Hi, it's November 8th, 2023, and welcome to our study. It's 2003 hours, or 2003 hours, Eastern Standard Time. And Ward Green with you again for today's study, little ones. Jesus lived some 1,500 years before Protestant reformer Martin Luther published his New Testament in German. This is chapter 11, paragraph 2 from Born and Raised, our article that we're studying. Now, the New Testament in German by Martin Luther was a work that in 1522 CE was the first German Bible mainly based on the original Hebrew and Greek and not on Latin. Other Bibles evidently had been based on the Latin, so this was the first to come from the original and be translated into German from the original languages. The persecution against Luther's work by the clergy of the Catholic Church ensured his commitment to his work of Bible translation was necessarily of a sufficiently high order so as to succeed despite church opposition. Mr. Luther believed that faith alone was necessary for salvation, which faith was not dependent on works, and he did not seek to stop the papacy nor the proponents of Islam from being allowed to pursue their teaching. It was a few years after the publication by Mr. Luther of the German New Testament in 1522 CE that in 1526 CE Mr. Tyndale first published his English New Testament. The invention of the printing press around the time of the birth of Leonardo da Vinci had made the publishing of such newly translated Bibles a massive opportunity. The year was 1452 CE, when Mr. Da Vinci was born, and a Holy Roman Emperor by the name of Frederick III became the first emperor of the House of Habsburg, a dynasty. And we'll see that was an important dynasty because it came all the way, it proceeded and lasted all the way until the First Great War, or the Great War as it was called then, which later was known as World War I. So that's the end of our study in the Born and Raised article. It's hard to remember that it's Born and Raised. I guess Born and Raised is an acronym for BAR. This chronology is the bar by which others are measured, is one way to look at the genealogy. Because we wouldn't want to be falsely humble and work against ourselves or speak so as to admit a fault against a brother, which is a biblical principle. Do not admit a fault against a brother. Now, Proverbs 27 and 6 is our scripture for today. Maybe we can look up the fault against a brother. Should we do that first? Let's see. The wounds inflicted by a lover are faithful, but the kisses of a hater are things to be entreated. Let's look up fault against a brother. Maybe fault brother. Shouldn't be many scriptures that say that. Here it is. Psalm 50 and 20. You sit and speak against your own brother. Against the son of your mother you give away a fault. And this was something that was the reason for a reproof having been given here. It's the wicked one to whom God will have to say these things. So it's wicked, according to Psalm 50 and 20, to give away a fault against a brother with the son of your mother, as it says. Let's go now, Jehovah willing, let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 8. Oh, I'm having a wonderful time researching the chronology, but it's difficult. It's like the chronology of the priests and the genealogy of the priests is difficult too, because it's not necessarily complete genealogies, but I did some calculations and it appeared that I was able to obtain a 35-year generation for the entire genealogy of all the priests of Jehovah. But there's a curious thing happening where in 1 Chronicles chapter 6, where it talks about the descendants of the priests and the priests who officiated in the days of Solomon, it's the correct number of generations since Eleazar, but the priests that are named have the same names as the priests who came after in the genealogy of the priests who presided from Solomon and onward during the first temple period. The same names on the list of priests appear to have repeated themselves, but they're not recorded there on that list. But that's the way that it can be explained without any contradiction. But Samuel, this is a very fascinating thing. We've only used 7 minutes so far. So Samuel, 1 Samuel. Now, the thing I want to note here is that in Josephus, in his work, Jewish Antiquities, it's also called Book 6 of Jewish Antiquities. It's chapter 13, section 5. I'm just checking to make sure that it is chapter 13. Yeah. But it's also called, in section 5, it's called Antiquities 1098. So maybe that's chapter, I'm not sure whether that refers to the number of the, let's see, I don't know. Chapter 1? Yeah, even chapter 1 begins 1148, so I think that's a reasonable assumption that these numbers are... There are many ways of cataloging what the number of a section is, so it's called 1097, but there's 1098. Why does the number go down? That's curious. Oh, okay. Well, they don't have numbers on all of them, so you can't use that number, 1098. Anyway, about this time, it says Samuel died. But it said that he had governed and presided over the people alone after the death of Eli, 12 years. Now, we believe that the 20 years of the Philistine domination continued prior to Samuel being the judge in the greening, at least that's the chronology we've adopted. So it doesn't agree with this saying, this writing of Josephus here, because he makes it sound like Samuel succeeded for 12 years directly after Eli, whereas we're saying the ark was in the location of Kiriath Jearim for 20 years before. That was the sequence of the account of 1 Samuel. Whether that was chronological, we don't know. But it works all too well this way, because Eli, everything works well. The generations, the genealogy of the priests who succeeded Eli, all of that seems to work fine. Now, could be different too, and it still work. But we don't have a problem with it. But we know that the problem that we do have is that we know that we don't have any doubt about it. So we're not we don't have a the problem we have is with Josephus, that we disagree with him, because the 300 years of Jephthah take us down to 1152, and that's 40 years of the Philistines' domination, and then Samuel defeats them. So we know when Samuel judged, and we know we also have a very good idea when Eli judged, and we know Samson was a judge in there too. So Josephus doesn't have the only or the best information on the subject either, because he was a first century historian. He didn't have the internet. He didn't have a lot of things. So we're not worried about it. But 18 years also, he says that Samuel judged together with Saul. So 18 years, that would be the time when either when Samuel died or when he went to his home and didn't see Saul anymore. And that happened in 1 Samuel 15 at the end of that chapter, where it says in verse 34, 1 Samuel 15, Samuel now went his way to Ramah. In verse 35, Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death. That would be Samuel's death, because Samuel died during the reign of King Saul, as we will see later in the study here. But so if that's 18 years, which I'm starting to believe that that's the point of the 18th year of or about 18 years of Saul's reign, when Samuel didn't see him anymore, because we know that subsequent to that, in the next chapter, Samuel anoints David to be the next king. And we're trying to piece together the chronology as we go along, which is not very easy to do with any of the kings of Israel at all. We don't know everything that happened during the reigns of the kings of Israel. But let's see what happened here. This is the chapter about the beginning of the kings of Israel, when the first king of Israel, Saul, was about to come into being in that capacity as king. So, 1 Samuel chapter 8, let's read. And it came about that as soon as Samuel had grown old, he made appointments of his sons as judges for Israel. We said Samuel was probably born between 1170 and 1160 BCE. So if he were born in 1165, he would be 65 years old at the time when Saul was first made king. So this is about when he'd grown old, apparently. Now the time, or the name, rather, of his firstborn son happened to be Joel, and the name of his second, Abijah. They were judging in Beersheba. And his sons did not walk in his ways. So he appointed his sons, but they didn't walk in his ways. They were inclined to follow unjust prophet and would accept a bribe and pervert judgment. In time, all the older men of Israel collected themselves together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Look, you yourself have grown old, but your own sons have not walked in your ways. Now do appoint for us a king to judge us like all the nations." You know, everyone else has a king. Why can't we have one? But the thing was bad in the eyes of Samuel, inasmuch as they had said, "Do give us a king to judge us." He didn't like that. And Samuel began to pray to Jehovah. Then Jehovah said to Samuel, "Listen to the voice of the people as respects all that they say to you, for it is not you whom they have rejected, but it is I whom they have rejected from being king over them, in accord with all their doings that they have done from the day of my bringing them up out of Egypt until this day, in that they kept leaving me and serving other gods. That is the way they are doing also to you. And now listen to their voice." God is telling Samuel, "Only this, that you should solemnly warn them, and you must tell them the rightful due of the king who will reign over them." So Samuel said all the words of Jehovah to the people who were asking a king of him. And he proceeded to say, "This will become the rightful due of the king that will reign over you. Your sons he will take and put them as his in his chariots and among his horsemen. And some will have to run before his chariots and to appoint for himself chiefs over thousands and chiefs over fifties, and some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his war instruments and his chariot instruments. And your daughters he will take for ointment mixers and cooks and bakers, and your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves, the best ones, he will take and actually give to his servants. And of your fields of seed and of your vineyards he will take the tenths, and he will certainly give them to his court officials and his servants, and your men servants and your maid servants and your best herds and your asses he will take, and he will have to use them for his work. Of your flocks he will take the tenth, and you yourselves will become his as servants. And you will certainly cry out in that day by reason of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But Jehovah will not answer you in that day. However, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel and said, "No, but a king is what will come to be over us. And we must become, we also, like all the nations, and our king must judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." And Samuel gave a hearing to all the words of the people. Then he spoke them in the ears of Jehovah. And Jehovah proceeded to say to Samuel, "Listen to their voice, and you must cause a king to reign for them." Accordingly, Samuel said to the men of Israel, "Go each one to his city." That's the end of 1 Samuel chapter 8. So I'd like to talk more about it, but we have to move on and read Jeremiah now. There's a lot more to say, but there's a lot more to study also. I need to learn more also about the events that occurred in the days of Samuel and Saul, who's about to be made king. Jeremiah chapter 12. "You are righteous, O Jehovah," Jeremiah continues. And remember, we've just seen that Jehovah has promised that he will deal a punishment to the men of Anathoth who were against Jeremiah, and he was from Anathoth. "You are righteous," it says, Jeremiah chapter 12, "O Jehovah, when I make my complaint to you." Jeremiah writes, "Indeed, when I speak even about matters of judgment with you, why is it that the way of wicked ones is what has succeeded, that all those who are committing treachery are the unworried ones? You have planted them. They have also taken root. They keep going ahead. They have also produced fruit. You are near in their mouth, but far away from their kidneys. And you yourself, O Jehovah, know me well. You see me, and you have examined my heart in union with yourself. Single them out like sheep for the slaughtering, and set them apart for the day of killing. How long should the land keep withering away, and the very vegetation of all the field dry up? Because of the badness of those dwelling in it, the beasts and the flying creatures have been swept away. For they have said, 'He does not see our future.' Because with footmen you have run, and they would tire you out, how then can you run a race with horses? And in the land of peace, are you confident? So how will you act among the proud thickets along the Jordan? For even your own brothers in the household of your father, even they themselves have dealt treacherously with you. Even they themselves have called out loudly behind you. Do not put any faith in them just because they speak to you good things. I have left my house. I have deserted my inheritance. I have given the beloved one of my soul into the palm of her enemies. My inheritance has become to me like a lion in the forest. She has let loose her voice, even against me. That is why I have hated her. My inheritance is as a many-colored bird of prey to me. The birds of prey are round about upon it. Come, gather together, all you wild beasts of the field. Bring them to eat. Many shepherds themselves have brought my vineyard to ruin. They have stamped down my share. They have turned my desirable share into a wilderness of a desolate waste. One has made it a desolate waste. It has withered away. It is desolated to me. The whole land has been made desolate because there is no man that has taken it to heart. On all the beaten paths through the wilderness the despoilers have come. For the sword belonging to Jehovah is devouring from one end of the land even to the other end of the land. There is no peace for any flesh. They have sown wheat, but thorns are what they have reaped. They have worked themselves sick. They will be of no benefit, and they will certainly be ashamed of the products of you people because of the burning anger of Jehovah. This is what Jehovah has said against all my bad neighbors who are touching the hereditary possession that I caused my people, even Israel, to possess. Here I am uprooting them from off their ground, and the house of Judah I shall uproot from the midst of them. And it must occur that after my uprooting them, I shall again certainly have mercy upon them, and will bring them back, each one to his hereditary possession, and each one to his land. And it must occur that if they will without fail learn the ways of my people in swearing by my name, quote, as Jehovah is alive, unquote, just as they taught my people to swear by Baal, they will also be built up in the midst of my people. But if they will not obey, I will also uproot that nation. Uprooting and destroying it is the utterance of Jehovah. That's the end of Jeremiah chapter 12. There's some interesting commentaries on Jeremiah 12. Right. I think, is it Barnes I'm thinking of, or Barnes maybe? Yeah, some divide Jeremiah, Barnes says, into three extracts, Jeremiah 12, 1 to 7, and then the intervening verses, and then Jeremiah 12, 14 to 17. And they consider it to be three separate sections. Whereas there's some interesting comments that are made with regard to this. Because you, with footmen you have run, verse 5, and they would tire you out, how can you run a race with horses if you can't run with footmen? And if you're confident in a peaceful place, how will you be among the proud thickets along the Jordan? Some commentators have mentioned that the thickets along the Jordan, which was not far from Anathoth, it was a place where you could, where the lions could roam, and there were, it was dangerous because of these lions that were there. So in other words, if you're not able to cope when you're in a place where there's nothing but peace, how are you going to do when there's danger? How are you going to handle the situation? That's what the commentary has been on verse 5, or some of the commentary anyway. So when I go back, let's see, I was looking at Jeremiah 6, the commentary, but the commentary on Jeremiah 5, right. So it's like Jehovah is answering Jeremiah in verse 5 and saying, you better get tough, you know, better be aware that your own brothers, it says there, have dealt treacherously with you. Right, the priests of Anathoth were trying to, they were threatening Jeremiah's life, and Jehovah was going to destroy them, as we saw in chapter, I'm trying to think of what the wording was, yeah, not even a remnant he would leave of them. He was going to bring a calamity upon them. They would die by the sword, the young men, and their sons and daughters would die by the famine, Jehovah said. So he was going to exterminate the men of Anathoth on Jeremiah's behalf. There's a lot to meditate on in that chapter, Jeremiah 12, but we've got to move on to Hebrews chapter 12. I know it's here. Where are you? Where are you? I guess we looked at Samuel. That's what it was. There we go. Here it is. Here it is. Hebrews chapter 12. And we just have enough time, I think, to do it. So then, because we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also put off every weight and the sin that easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, as we look intently at the chief agent and perfecter of our faith, Jesus. For the joy that was set before him, he endured a torture stake, despising shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Indeed, consider closely the one who has endured such contrary talk by sinners against their own interests, that you may not get tired and give out in your souls. It sounds like maybe Jeremiah was talking contrary against his own interests, and Jehovah had to rebuke him and try to smarten him up. Verse 4, in carrying on your contest against that sin, you have never yet resisted as far as blood, but you have entirely forgotten the exhortation which addresses you as sons. My son, do not belittle the discipline from Jehovah, neither give out when you are corrected by him. For whom Jehovah loves, he disciplines. In fact, he scourges every one whom he receives as a son. It is for discipline you are enduring. Proverbs 3 and 12 is regarding the discipline of Jehovah. And 3:11 also. It is for discipline you are enduring. God is dealing with you as with sons. Verse 7. For what son is he that a father does not discipline? But if you are without the discipline of which all have become partakers, you are really illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we used to have fathers who were of our flesh to discipline us, and we used to give them respect. Shall we not much more subject ourselves to the Father of our spiritual life and live? For they for a few days used to discipline us according to what seemed good to them. But he does so for our profit, that we may partake of his holiness. True, no discipline seems for the present to be joyous, but grievous. Yet afterward, to those who have been trained by it, it yields peaceable fruit, namely righteousness. Hence, straighten up the hands that hang down and the enfeebled knees, and keep making straight paths for your feet, that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather that it may be healed. Pursue peace with all people and the sanctification, without which no man will see the Lord, carefully watching that no one may be deprived of the undeserved kindness of God, that no poisonous root may spring up and cause trouble, and that many may not be defiled by it, that there may be no fornicator, nor anyone not appreciating sacred things like Esau, who in exchange for one meal gave away his rights as firstborn. For you know that afterward also, when he wanted to inherit the blessing, he was rejected. For although he earnestly sought a change of mind with tears, he found no place for it. Genesis 27:34. Now, verse 18, for you have not approached that which can be felt, and which has been set aflame with fire, and a dark cloud, and thick darkness, and a tempest, and the blare of a trumpet, and the voice of words, on hearing which voice the people implored that no word should be added to them, for the command was not bearable to them. Quote, and if a beast touches the mountain, it must be stoned. End quote. Also, the display was so fearsome that Moses said, quote, I am fearful and trembling, end quote. But you have approached a Mount Zion and a city of the living God, heavenly Jerusalem, and myriads of angels in general assembly, and the congregation of the firstborn who have been enrolled in the heavens, and God the judge of all, and the spiritual lives of righteous ones who have been made perfect, and Jesus the mediator of a new covenant, and the blood of sprinkling, which speaks in a better way than Abel's blood. See that you do not beg off from him who is speaking, for if they did not escape who begged off from him who is giving divine warning upon earth, much more shall we not, if we turn away from him who speaks from the heavens. At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I will set in commotion not only the earth, but also the heaven. Now the expression yet once more signifies the removal of the things being shaken as things that have been made, in order that the things not being shaken may remain. Wherefore, seeing that we are to receive a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us continue to have undeserved kindness, through which we may acceptably render God's sacred service with godly fear and awe. For our God is also a consuming fire. Wow. That's the end of Hebrews chapter 12. We're just about done. Seeing as we have approached Mount Zion, you have approached Mount Zion, verse 22, and the city of the living God, namely Jerusalem. This is the heavenly Jerusalem, namely heavenly Jerusalem, right? Heavenly Jerusalem, city of the living God, heavenly Jerusalem. So the new covenant is quite something. Not that God wasn't living in the days of Moses either. He was. God was a living God back in the days of Moses. He's always been a living God. Jehovah's the same yesterday and today. He's unchanging. In the sense that he has a purpose, and he's faithful to his own purpose, and he's loving, and that love never changes. He's always loving. And we're just about completed now for the video. The video's done, as well as the study. I hope you enjoyed it, but it's time to go. November 8th, 2023. The time is 20:36 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green saying, I love you very much. On my behalf, this is Crow and Cassie, my two watches, saying bye for now.